Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. Forever slaves to the prevailing winds, possessed of the belief that the phrase gatekeeper bespeaks a presumption unfitting our democratic inclinations. Pleased to outsource our coverage. We hereby present a cavalcade of the most emailed, blogged, and viewed stories on the internet. To wit, we announce the most.
Brilliant.
Nicely done.
Pithy.
Pithy. Not the word I would have chosen. Patricia.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I have one of the most viewed and most emailed stories on USA Today, and I have a feeling the people who emailed it put a big OMG on the headline, because listen to this. U.S. has Mandela on terrorist list.
As in Nelson.
As in Nelson Mandela, Nobel Peace Prize winner, man who was freed after 27 years in prison.
Instrumental in ending apartheid in South Africa.
Yeah.
Terrorist.
Yeah.
Terrorist.
Well, so here's the deal.
That's lower down on the resume.
That's a classic terrorist maneuver there.
Here's the deal. Back in the
70s. Years in prison.
Would you like to hear the story?
Okay,
I want to hear Dan.
Okay.
So,
I don't know if you know, Dan had an adjoining cell on Robben Island.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So back in the 70s and 80s, the ANC, the African National Congress, was officially designated a terrorist group by the ruling white minority. This is all, by the way, a USA Today Enterprise story, so I want to give them a shout out for this. So, you know, I guess ever since,
he's been on the
anybody who was ever part of the ANC is still on that list. So, in order
so the
for
entire
him,
government of South Africa.
In order for Nelson Mandela to come to the U.S., he has to get a special waiver from the State Department. And Condoleezza Rice,
says
the situation is embarrassing. There's now a law that's being proposed by Representative Howard Berman, Democrat of California. They're trying to remove him from this list before his birthday, his 90th birthday in July.
Well, if he gets special coverage, then we're going to have to extend it to the Pope, and then all hell will break loose. Dan, do you have a most story?
I do indeed. I got a most emailed here from Yahoo News. Websites promote hypermiling to save on fuel. We all know price of gas going way up. Well, there's a new and increasingly popular technique called hypermiling promoted on a growing number of websites. And it's a variety of strategies you can use to get much better mileage out of your car. It includes pumping up tires to the maximum rating on their sidewalls, which may be higher than the levels recommended in car manuals. Using engine oil of a low viscosity, and the controversial practice of drafting behind other vehicles on the highway to reduce aerodynamic drag. That's a practice begun a few years ago by truck drivers. NASCAR drivers use it all the time. We here on the BPP do not recommend drafting.
Trade and paint on I-95?
Right,
never heard anyone.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it did.
Yeah. But this technique was apparently invented by a man named Wayne Gurdis in Wadsworth, Illinois. He says that he gets 40 to 70 miles per gallon out of his Ford Ranger pickup truck, which only has an official fuel consumption of 25 miles per gallon. He says it saved him $15,000 since he started doing it about seven years ago. There is another technique. Even if you have a hybrid car, you can make it more efficient, and that is that this other guy says that he does something called pulse and glide, in which he accelerates and then coasts with the engine off until around 15 miles an hour when he kicks the engine back on and accelerates again. He calls it the automotive equivalent of skateboarding.
Just walk.
To that,
get a skateboard.
To that guy, I do not say shotgun. Matt.
Hi. I have the most emailed at the BBC.
Okay.
Headline, keyboard's dirtier than a toilet.
Gross.
Yeah. This is awful. Okay,
disgusting.
Some computer keyboards harbor more harmful bacteria than a toilet seat. This consumer group tested 33 keyboards, and four were regarded as potential health hazards. One harbored five times more germs than one of the office's toilet seats. And the scientist who swabbed them says that basically our keyboards are a reflection of what is in our nose and our guts. And one of the keyboards was quarantined. I don't know why they didn't just throw it away.
Total justification, vindication for you as you spray down and
I have Lysol wipes on my desk and an industrial strength bottle of Purell.
I used to make fun of you, but now I'm going to go back.
I just want to point out that right before this segment, Jacob and I were having a fight in here in the control room because I'm on the director's mic. The director's mic, not the editor's mic.
Yeah.
And I'm getting my germs all over it and it makes them uncomfortable.
To be fair, one of those keyboards belonged to a guy from Toilet Review Quarterly.
This is true.
So that could explain things.
That is not true. The kicker here.
True, not true.
Compared to men, on average, women have 3 to 4 times the amount of germs on their keyboard.
Oh, interesting. stink.
Which proves my theory. I'm not going there. Okay.
The girls are gross. Ian!
Speaking of Toilet Mag Quarterly, was it?
Yeah.
Most read.
They had to come back their issues, yeah.
It's the most read from the Lincoln Journal Star
Nebraska. That's funny.
An inmate in Nebraska State Pen is suing. He claims that the three porn magazines to which he subscribes are being stolen before they get to him. He's lost 10 to 15 issues.
Yeah.
He says the staff is tampering with his mail, violating his First and Eighth Amendment rights. Eighth Amendment being your right to adult male literature.
Yeah. Searching through the Constitution, looking for that one.
I gotta say, if what's going on there, if this is really happening, then, you know, it's really not fair. Porn or not, whatever you're, whether it be Toilet Mag Quarterly or Hustler, I got a feel for the guy.
Yeah.
I disagree, but that's okay. Rachel, you have the last most
quickly,
of the day.
Okay, quickly, my most is from CNN. This is the story about Barbara Walters. She's written a book called Audition. And it's a little bit of a tell-all. She admits to having what at the time would have been a controversial affair with a U.S. Senator, Senator Edward Brooke, who in the 1970s, he was the first African-American to popularly be elected to the Senate. And they never revealed this affair until just now. She was on Oprah Winfrey, dishing all about it. That will air on Tuesday. Winfrey asks Walters if she was in love. She says, quote, "I was certainly, I don't know, I was infatuated."
And the media is trying to track down Brooke, and so far he has offered no comment. I believe he was married at the time, she was not.
Exactly.
And I have the most emailed story at npr.org. The headline is, "Some patients say life after LASIK, not perfect." The story is by NPR's Allison Aubrey, and let's take a listen to that.
Lots of us know someone, a colleague, cousin, or friend who's had LASIK eye surgery and loves the results. The freedom from glasses or contacts is liberating, and 20/20 vision can feel nothing short of a miracle. But about 5% of patients who have the procedure are not satisfied. It's a small fraction, but with almost a million surgeries each year, there are thousands of complaints. Take patient Joseph Schnell, who had LASIK 2 years ago.
If I look to the extreme left, I can see like a double of everything. It's hard for me to focus. It's even more pronounced when I'm tired.
Schnell is a 48-year-old tradesman who builds elevators for a living. He says his night vision is a problem. When he looks at streetlights or headlights, he sees starbursts where the light explodes out as if he were staring at a sparkler. Schnell says he used to be a very confident driver.
Now it's sometimes I see headlights come any other way. It's just like I'm not sure if I see everything clearly beyond the headlights because they're just the halos and the starbursts. I just don't know if I'm really being safe.
Schnell says when he had LASIK, he did not meet his surgeon until a few minutes before the procedure. He says the technician and optometrist who did the pre-surgical exams didn't make much time for questions.
I had to pull her teeth as far as getting information out of her.
And one thing never mentioned, LASIK will not fix or prevent the decline in close-up vision, which necessitates reading glasses.
No one ever told me that.
Schnell says in retrospect, he could have demanded more information. LASIK centers require patients to sign forms disclosing the risk of complications, but patients don't always read or understand the fine print.
I mean, I share definitely part of the blame for going ahead with this surgery.
But when he spoke publicly at a Food and Drug Administration hearing about LASIK, he found himself in the company of many other patients who say they deserved more warnings and more discussion with doctors about the risks up front.
I do think it's possible that patients may not always be getting all of their questions asked.
Surgeon Kerry Solomon is a leader in the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgery. He says if people have unanswered questions before the surgery, they should hold off. The give and take is critical and should be standard.
If a patient's in a position where they don't feel people really haven't had a discussion with them about risks and they're not comfortable with that, then I would get a second opinion.
The FDA says it's not certain how many LASIK patients have problems with their vision weeks or months after their surgeries. The agency's planning a new study to get a better handle on the prevalence. It's scheduled to begin next year. But there's also a way for individual consumers to report their complications with LASIK directly to the FDA. To do so, you fill out a form on the FDA website. The agency's Mary Wick Brady says it takes about 10 minutes.
We encourage as much information information as possible here, because FDA does look at every voluntary report that comes in.
And the agency uses them to help determine if some new action is needed. When we logged on to try to find this form, we found we needed a little direction. So we got to the FDA homepage.
Okay.
What do we do next?
If you look on the right-hand column, there's an area that says report a problem.
The page looks a bit like a multiple choice test. The X you're looking for is the one marked adverse event. This is just a jargony phrase which means a bad outcome.
If it's a decrease in vision, if it's a halo, if it's a starburst, if it's a problem with night vision, these types of things would be considered adverse events to FDA, and we would want those reported because it has affected your vision.
In the last decade, the FDA has received only about 140 of these adverse event reports, nowhere near the number of patients that surveys and studies estimate to be dissatisfied. It's possible that the unfortunate stories such as Joseph Schnell's are few and far between, but it's also possible that surgeons and patients have underreported complications. To protect yourself before opting to have the surgery, experts say you should make sure you get a thorough screening.
It's not uncommon for us to bring the patient in two or three times.
Surgeon Scott McGray of the University of Rochester says conditions such as dry eye or corneal irregularities need to be checked out in detail and may make an individual a poor candidate for the surgery. If the system of screening and consultation can be improved upon, it's possible that the 95% satisfaction rate with LASIK could rise even higher.
And that's Allison Aubrey reporting. The story is one of the most emailed at NPR.org right now. You can find a link to this and all the stories you heard on The Most Today by going to our website, NPR.org/Bryant Park.